Plant, and I'm here to talk about recent immigrant working and renovation and construction business and their families are increased risk of lead poisoning. The Boston Public Health Commission Lead Poisoning Prevention Program does a lot of surveillance throughout the city of Boston. We have our city is one of the cities that has 67% of its housing is built before 1978 and contains a lot of lead paint. And this is particular to a lot of the high-risk neighborhoods where there's a large minority population, about 70% African-American, which live in that housing. And, of course, their children are primarily affected with lead poisoning. One of the things that we've been able to do over a 35-year period at the Lead Poisoning Prevention Program is to develop a lead case management system which tracks all our children, all the children that are brought into case management, and allows us to do surveillance on the case management system for elevated blood lead levels. That surveillance has allowed us to look at each individual neighborhood, also to target our resources to doing work in those neighborhoods to really reduce the level of elevated blood lead levels throughout the city of Boston. One of the things that we have is our licensed health inspectors that go out and do the inspections. We also have community health workers, outreach workers, social workers, to go out and to do the work within the families and the children to ensure that they are getting the needs and their needs are being met in terms of lead paint poisoning. One of the things that allows us to do the kind of enforcement when property owners do not do the necessary work is to, we have a Massachusetts lead law, which is very tough on property owners, landlords, who have deteriorated housing with lead paint and don't bring them into compliance. We also use another public health policy and regulation, the sanitary codes, 197 through 199B, and we also, as I mentioned, the lead law, which is 460, 105, 460, and then, of course, we use nuisance laws when things don't quite fit into the really restricted language in the lead law. And we use that Chapter 111, 122, 127K. One of the things that we started to do is as we're going out and we're on a daily basis doing neighborhood surveillance, we respond every day to complaints from neighbors about someone doing illegal work in the neighborhood, particularly someone's illegally delaying their house or doing unauthorized work to remove lead paint from the exterior of their homes. And these calls come in frequently from banks, residential neighborhood people. It comes in from the mayor's hotline. So complaints are received, and we respond to those complaints on a daily basis. Our inspectors go out, validate whether those are real complaints or whether they're unnecessary complaints, and then move forward. One of the things that we found out throughout this whole process is that we found a lot of new recent immigrants doing a lot of the unauthorized work, and they were unprepared, really, to do this work. They hadn't been trained. Their employers had not given them the proper dermal and respiratory protection, and there was a language barrier when we were trying to educate them on site. Now, our office has a lot of people who are fluent in, are fluent in the languages of the neighborhood, and one of the things that they are able to do is to bring people together even when they don't speak that particular language. We have outreach workers can go out and do the translation. Because we initially did not have someone speaking Portuguese, Brazilian Portuguese, effectively communicate with the workers, we had to get someone there so they could understand what we were trying to tell them and to actually give them some education and to provide them information that was necessary to protect them from lead dust, which was most of the houses have about 7% lead paint And of course, if they're scraping it very without the dermal protection, they're going to have a high elevated blood lead level that they're being exposed to. And our concern was also that they might be taking those lead burdens back to their families. Each year, we do about 100 cease work orders throughout the high-risk neighborhoods in the city of Boston. And we find that once we've issued them, we have to play a catch-up because they go from one neighborhood to the next doing work, and we have to catch them several times. And the employers are notorious for shifting their workers from one site to the next. So it makes it very difficult to cover. We have about 5 inspectors to cover the entire city of Boston, 47 square miles, to ensure that, you know, people aren't doing. But one of the best things is that our neighbors, neighborhood advocacy groups, and complaints come in, and we do follow those up. But we actually literally have to catch people before we can do something about it. One of the things that we've been looking at is the prevalence rates of elevated blood lead levels in each Boston neighborhood. And because the immigrants that we found, the Brazilians were mostly living in one neighborhood of Austin Brighton, which is here, you can see the prevalence rate over the last few years, from 2000, calendar year of 2002 to 2006, for Boston, is down about 2%. And we screen about 24,000 kids a year. So you look at Austin Brighton, it's about 1.5% in terms of the prevalence rate. And you look at the center of the, you see that the North and South Dorchester are the highest risk areas in the city most of the time. And now, North Dorchester now actually had an increase in 2006. So this is due to the large number of children living there and also the deteriorated housing, substandard conditions there. We do see a decline since 91 in terms of the elevated blood levels across the board in the city, but we do have some neighborhoods that are more difficult to get the reduction to happen in a quick manner based on the amount of renovation work going on. And you can see here in Hyde Park, now, what are the one of the things that we like to see is, you know, what's the spatial distribution of all the elevated blood lead levels in the city? And again, this map from 2003 is pretty standard for the last 4 years. You see the high concentration of elevated blood lead levels in the high risk areas in North and South Dorchester, Mattapan, Boxford, and then Austin Brighton here. You have a more spread out levels of elevated blood lead levels here in Austin Brighton. And this is where most of the Brazilians live, along the Austin, Brighton, and Cambridge line. And the housing per se is not that deteriorated, but they are working in conditions that are bringing them in higher risk to be lead poisoned. And again, this is pretty typical of the map that you would see, and it hasn't changed that much in terms of the last 4 years. You see this particular cluster right around the high-risk neighborhoods of North and South Dorchester. One of the things that we continue to look into is that what can we do to see increased risk of getting the Brazilians the information that they need to get so they can not expose themselves and to expose their children or their families to lead paint poisoning. And the best thing we found is that, on the next slide, is that we needed to build collaborative partnerships with the key stakeholders in the neighborhoods. And that was established that Joseph M. Smith is one of our community health neighborhood health centers in the Austin-Brighton area, and they do treat a lot of the Latino families as well as the Portuguese families and Brazilians. We also met with them to talk about doing the kind of outreach to the Brazilian population. And in 2005, we met with their community health worker who was there doing outreach to the Brazilian immigrant population. We met with her, and we discussed, you know, what we'd like to accomplish there. And what we wanted to accomplish is to get this lead awareness out among the Brazilian population, to increase screening of their children. And one thing that we hadn't been doing as a childhood lead poisoning prevention program is to look at the adult screening, because there's not a lot of information on what the lead levels are in adults, and particularly those who are in high-risk occupations, to see if their levels are affecting their health. One of the things that we did is to decide to try and use a mobile health van throughout the community to try and bring a one-stop shop, a one-stop screening and diagnostic center on-site where day laborers work. Usually the Brazilians assemble around 6:30 to 7 o'clock in the morning in a parking lot, and they are chosen to go to different venues to do work. The employers offer no kinds of safety precautions, no kind of protection equipment or dermal protection for their workers. They simply are chosen for a job, and they go to the site and they do the work, and a lot of the work they do is in the painting industry, in the demolition and construction industries, and they are being exposed to high levels of lead dust when they're doing this work on these very old buildings. One of the things that we wanted to do was to make sure that we get each of those adults who were willing to come forward to get screened, to have their blood tested, to give them lead awareness education about the dangers of lead poisoning. We decided to do this by working with another key stakeholder in the Brazilian community, and that was the Brazilian Immigrant Center, which is an advocacy group for workers' rights and workers' health and workers' occupational health and safety. And we decided to use mini grants to help support not only their outreach workers at Joseph Smith's Community Health Center, but also to support the outreach efforts of the Brazilian Immigrant Center, to go out, to educate, to provide on-site training for the day workers so that they can be able to understand the dangers of lead paint poisoning and how to protect themselves. And once we found that we started to provide the training on-site for the Brazilian Immigrant Center, workers started to be more vocal about their rights and what they were being exposed to. Particularly, we had people who were working on-site, women who were pregnant, not knowing that they were exposing themselves to high levels of lead dust that would be, in turn, passed on to their developing fetus, and of course, they would be highly poisoned. And of course, in Massachusetts, pregnant women aren't really protected under the lead law. You'd have to be born first and under 6 years old before you could actually be protected under the lead law. Yes? Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh. Well, let me just say this, that the Division of Occupational Health and Safety was part of our collaborative partnership that we developed with the Brazilian Immigrant Center, the Joseph Smith Community Health Center, and that is still continuing on. Although the study is very small right now, we're still trying to get those people to come forward in terms of the Brazilians to come forward and be screened. We're doing this work continuously in the neighborhood and at different festivals, church events, and so forth. The mean age is about 36.5 years for the adults. 94% of them are male, 5% female. And of course, the mean blood lead levels are 14.7 micrograms per deciliter. And for the children, there are 2 micrograms per deciliter. About 11% of them had levels greater than 40, which CDC says they have to be removed from the work site until their levels drop below 25. ZPP's way over 100, somewhere up over 800, and so these are serious, highly poisoned immigrant families, and they have to deal with that. And of course, one of the things we've learned is to ensure that contractors are held responsible for protecting their workers under OSHA 29 CFR 1910, that painting contractors are regulated in the future. We're looking towards to regulate all paint contractors in the city of Boston so they're trained in safety awareness, dust mitigation, and containment practices. And additionally, we are looking to target outreach to other Latino groups, other Dominican groups, and other Haitian immigrant groups that in different parts of the city. And we feel this will be an effective model that we can use in each key neighborhood for those who are working in the demolition and painting construction industries. And so we're continuously doing this work. It's not finished, and we're still collecting data.